What is up, everyone? Welcome back to our little podcast here at Fandango. My name is Eric Davis, and joining me, as always, is Sean O'Connell. And Sean, next week is the 4th of July weekend. It's, I think, next to Memorial Day weekend. It's the biggest weekend for summer movies. And also, the weekend before, we have this sort of like movies that come out on Friday, and then only a couple of a few days later, before July 4th, holiday, more movies come out, and they're all really big movies. They're all big spectacle movies. So today we're going to talk about what makes that for the perfect July 4th blockbuster, our favorites, and then we'll get into the movies coming out this week. So Sean, let me ask you, what do you think makes the perfect July 4th blockbuster?
I think you have to have a couple of different key components. Obviously, that has to be an effects-driven blockbuster. I was going back over the last 10 years of July 4th releases, and there's some strange play. Like, there's a Twilight Saga. You know, Eclipse came out in 2010. Public Enemies was a Johnny Depp one in 2009. But those don't stand out to me. They don't feel like 4th of July movies, whereas I think almost every Transformers movie came out over that weekend, over the July 4th weekend. We've had a couple of different Spider-Man movies come out in 2012 and all the way back in 2005 or 2006. Superman Returns was a July 4th one. So I think you have to have spectacle, visual spectacle. But I also think it helps to have, you know, some A-list power. Will Smith crowned himself the king of 4th of July, and for a reason, because he was usually able to open these movies really big. They sold it on his personality. And I think you have to have someone that you can hang your hat on. With the Transformers franchise, it might not be Shia LaBeouf, but it's definitely like Michael Bay's robots. And it, you know, it's seeing the Transformers on the big screen. So I think star power and visual spectacleness, spectacality, spectacle, you know, something big and splashy on the big screen.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I mean, I look at the list from recent years, and I see some of the films that have a specific element, like, but I feel like these films should also be accessible for people and relatable. I mean, these are characters that you want to have fun with, that you want to go on an adventure with. I think some of the best 4th of July movies are ones that make you really care about these characters, and they incorporate a certain a human element to them, a relatability, that they have a lot of heart. They're poignant at times, but they also have these monster action sequences that you only get one time a year, and this is that time of year. And that's what I look for, you know. My personal favorite, let's do that. Let's get that out there now. My personal favorite, and I'm going to say this because it also ties to a movie that's coming out this weekend in a lot of ways, is Independence Day. I feel like Independence Day is the perfect July 4th blockbuster, not just because it's tied into the holiday itself, but it just has it all. It's got fireworks, and I know that sounds really weird and lame to say, but it does. It's got fireworks, and I say that because when you go to a fireworks show, you want to see the spectacle of it, the way everything looks in the air all together in one piece, these really big moments of spectacle. But then you also have these really beautiful images and these beautiful emotions that kind of come out of it, that spring out of it. And I feel like that film has a lot of that. And I was going back this weekend even watching it. And the moments when the president, finally they get his wife back. You remember this?
Yeah,
in the film, they finally reconnect. He finally reconnects with his wife, the first lady of the United States, and their daughter, and she's hurt and she's gonna die.
Right.
And I actually had to turn the station off. And I don't know if it's because I have kids now, and it's like, you know, anytime like a scene like that comes on, I get really freaking emotional. But right. But that the scene when like he comes in after being told his wife's gonna die, and they like they're sitting together as a family, as the world is caving in. Like, these are the kind of moments. Like, that's why I love that film, and that's why that's what I feel like a July 4th blockbuster needs, are those human moments that you really connect with right before, it goes down, let's say.
Well, and I think that almost every July 4th blockbuster, you know, since then have been chasing that feeling, you know, that sort of jaw-dropping in the theater spectacle that Roland Emmerich delivered in Independence Day. And so, I mean, I'd be hard pressed to argue with you, because looking over these, you know, I went back over the last 10 years and nothing stands on that level. Nothing really rises to the challenge of, like, there are definitely some big budget blockbuster films, but Hancock isn't that. You know, none of the Transformers movies are that. The Pirates of the Caribbean movies, that few of them came out over July 4th weekend, but they're not that. Independence Day, I'd have to go back and really dig, but Independence Day might be the one that really capped off the, we're going to start with a huge July 4th weekend and claim this as a prime territory for Hollywood blockbusters. And you're exactly right. It worked on so many different levels. I also think that that has a lot going for it in the fact that it was original. You know, it's not that it was nobody had seen aliens coming down to our planet before, but the way that it was told and the way that the, you know, just destroyed our cities in spectacular and shocking fashion, and maybe pre, you know, 9/11, so it wasn't quite such a hot button topic for us at that point. Everybody really rallied behind the let's go kick some butt because of what was done to us type of atmosphere. And I think that sort of patriotism sometimes feeds into what I look for in a rah-rah, you know, go America, 4th of July type movie.
Yeah, I think the closest, like, and I'm looking at the list now in front of me, I think the closest we came was probably 2005 with War of the Worlds.
Yes.
And that's a movie that I feel like is underrated in Spielberg's filmography. I really love that movie. And there's a lot of really great things that he does in that movie. It's very Spielbergian at the end, but
it is. And I'm actually surprised that I didn't see more of his films, because I kind of thought that he would be one of those directors, like, you know, that had something that, because he is such a populist director. And you talked about how the 4th of July movie should sort of appeal to all four quadrants and get everybody wanting to go to the theater over the weekend. So, I mean, his last one was War of the Worlds all the way back in 2000 and what did you say?
2005. Yeah. But after that, I mean, you look at a year like 2010 with The Last Airbender and the Twilight Saga Eclipse. And you just have to think to yourself, what is going on here? These aren't July 4th movies, you know. So you have these years where you kind of get these weird sort of moments, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, between now and, off the top of my head, I don't know if I'll be able to do it the 4th of July. I know 2015 is Independence Day 2, so it'll be interesting to see if Independence Day 2 is able to bring back what I guess it started with Independence Day 1, because really, with the exception of War of the Worlds, I feel like no other film has come close to
Step 4, potentially this weekend, where Roland Emmerich tries to do it all over again in a different fashion, but with White House Down.
He does. And you know what? And that's one of the things I think I've called White House Down the perfect summer movie, because it is. And, you know, I think its faults are that, yes, it's original, but it feels very much like Die Hard, and that they borrow a lot from Die Hard.
It is Die Hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just – and it doesn't pretend not to be, I don't think.
No.
You know? And it's a better Die Hard movie than the Die Hard movie we got this year.
Much better. It is a knock on it in some ways, but it's not, because it's very successful at what it does, and it's a really fun movie. But it is one of those films that, like Independence Day, and this is one of the things that Roland Emmerich, I feel like, you know, he's good at in some ways, is pulling out those human elements and crafting characters that you really care about in moments that kind of endear you to them, amidst, you know, driving around the White House lawn with a rocket launcher and shooting it out the window. I mean, come on, you know, that in terms of spectacle, that's what you also want to see on July 4th weekend. You want to see our president of the United States hanging outside a window shooting a rocket launcher through his front gate.
Yes, I imagine that you do. And it also gives us one of the better heroes that we've seen in a long time. I miss that underdog kind of hero that Channing Tatum plays, a guy who he gets – this isn't spoilery, but he gets separated from his daughter when the attack happens on the White House, and he's just concerned about getting back to her and finding out where she is. And then he has to sort of mix it up with these terrorists because he's in the middle of all of this stuff. But I really – that's my favorite type of action hero is a guy who isn't – you know, he's not a superhero. He's not completely armed to the teeth. He's not built like Schwarzenegger. He's just a regular guy who happened to be, of course, in the Die Hard fashion, the wrong place at the wrong time. And I think Tatum does a really good job with this. I'm not saying that I need to see, you know, four more of them the way that happened with the Die Hard movies, but it worked for this story that they were trying to tell.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's just, it's really fun. And it's the kind of film that, you know, when I left Independence Day, you know, Independence Day was one of my most memorable movie-going experiences, if you can believe it. The film came out in 1996, but I was right in that time of high school. Or actually, I had just graduated high school. So I was right in this peak time of being a teenager where, like, you know, movies really, you know, going to the movies with my friends and seeing films that, like, really excite us was something I really looked forward to. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Independence Day came at a time when now technology is starting to get better. We've gone through Jurassic Park, and now we're sort of achieving a level we had never seen before. And, you know, these were exciting times. I feel like these days, and I wrote about this recently, we're so numb to visual effects these days that, yeah, you know, unless something is slapping you literally across the face, it's not impacting us the way it used to when, say, surround sound was a brand new thing with Jurassic Park and it freaked me the hell out in the movie theater. Or right, when Roland Emmerich pushed a button on what we've seen before. We've never seen, I think, U.S. landmarks destroyed and make it look so realistic.
And I feared that he lost his touch for telling a good story because 2012 was just too all over the place, yeah, you know. And I think this is a more focused film. I think by limiting himself to this one location of the White House, you know, he's able to sort of fine tune the things that he normally does really, really well, which is amp up tension. You know, maybe the last 15 minutes of this movie are completely gonzo to the point where you're just sort of shaking your head. But if by this point you're already on the ride and you're enjoying yourself, I think he remembers how to have a good time with a huge story.
He does. And he didn't write this one. So we can't give him full credit for finding his way back when it comes to writing. But you can tell, but it's very much a role an Emmerich movie, and you can tell that he highlights I think James Vanderbilt's script. He's able to kind of find the Emmerich touches in that script and really highlight them throughout the film, and it's a really fun movie. Also this weekend we have The Heat with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy. Neither of us have seen it.
No, but what I found interesting about this movie is that it was supposed to come out several months ago. And here is, you know, 20th Century Fox slotting this movie into what we are now calling on this podcast, you know, one of the most important weekends of the year. So that has to be a vote of confidence for it.
It does. It's a vote of confidence for that. It's a vote of confidence for female-led, female-driven movies, comedies, big summer movies. It's unfortunate that I feel like The Heat, I think, aside from maybe Mortal Instruments may have a female lead, but aside from that, this is the only female-driven movie we're getting this summer.
Right. Yeah, it's true. I mean, the Hollywood thinks that it's making progress just because The Hunger Games is a franchise, you know, but it's still so male-driven, male-dominated at this stage. That I hope that people go out and support The Heat just because these are two immensely talented actresses who, you know, genuinely seem to click. I've seen them in a few interview sessions already. They have a ton of chemistry. And if what they're able to conjure in these daytime and nighttime talk show segments translates at all to the screen. And it's from the director of Bridesmaids. And so we know that he's coming off of a hit. That was a very, very funny movie. And I think that it can hopefully translate to The Heat. We'll find out this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And if that doesn't convince you, I mean, I've heard from a number of my very good friends that it's a very, very funny movie and very entertaining. So I think the fact that they're already doing the sequel to it leads us to believe that they were successful on this first time. But we, of course, apologize for not seeing. I don't know, when was the last time we both hadn't seen a movie?
It's been a long time. No, and it, you know, been. I mean, we often will call a studio out if it doesn't want to show the movie to critics. But I mean, they did screen it yesterday, like, you know, last night. I just was not able to make it to it, unfortunately.
I agree. But it's you know, again, a good weekend to go to the movies. You know, we'll see. We have these two movies, and then Lone Ranger, I think, are our big kind of 4th of July week movies this year.
Look out for Despicable Me 2 also.
Despicable Me 2, yes.
I hear from a lot of families who say that they can't wait to go see it because they love the first one, and the first one made a lot of money.
And you know what's interesting? It looks like, based on this list that's in front of me, Ice Age, Dawn of the Dinosaurs in 2009 was really the last kids movie.
Right, right.
That was released.
They've done a very good job of spacing out the animated features. It, like, Epic had some room to breathe. Monsters had a little bit of room to breathe. Despicable will have a little bit. It'll be Smurfs right behind it. But they each get, like, 2 or 3 weeks to capitalize and find their audiences. So I think Monsters did well, and Despicable Me is going to be up next.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. We'll talk a little bit more about those next week. But go out and go see White House Down, see the heat, and enjoy your weekend at the movies, everyone.